The University of Detroit Mercy presents another encore presentation of a classic Ask the Professor radio program. Today's show takes us back to October 2007.
The university tower chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the radio show where you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host with the twisted tongue, Kathy Bush, and today let me introduce the panel to you. To my left, from the Department of Philosophy, and about hopefully to be paroled from being the co-chair of the Core Curriculum Committee, martyrdom by pinpricks, it's Professor Beth Olchar.
Dan, I think it would be totally okay for you to scoop the pudding out of the remaining, the custard out of the remaining chunk of the
almond. We're talking about a wonderful, wonderful coffee cake from Knutson's Danish Bakery in Detroit.
Yum-o.
Picked up very early this morning, but I was told it was made fresh, and I put it in the refrigerator to keep the custard, you know,
from giving
everybody botulism or something. It is. They just kick out. Yeah.
As
yum,
Drew
yum.
Says, Kathy always gets the best treats.
Sugar rules,
no
okay?
Sugar and caffeine high.
Well, there's no
That's
better
why he
way
looks
to
so
be.
Happy.
Now, around the table from Beth, another chair in the chair at the end of the table, the chair of the History Department, and, of course, the person in charge of our Black Abolitionist Archives at the university, it's Professor Roy Finkenbein.
Good to be here, Kathy. I just want to go on record. I am not here for the president's amusement.
Well, we're really glad to hear that.
You heard that. You heard that.
Yes, I did. And I just thought, honey, please get over
Probably
yourself.
None of us would amuse him. So that's
I was going to say, I don't think he'd find any of us likable or laughable during most of our work and lives. So, and on the other side of Roy, from the College of Engineering and Science, it's Dan, the Tech Day man, Maggio, because he's got a big event coming up. Tell us about Tech Day, Dan.
It's the 17th year of this wonderful annual event.
And you've got how many?
We have about 8, I think I have 800 students and teachers.
Whoa.
Coming all together.
And of course, are you going to have a new Tech Day t-shirt?
We do have a new Tech Day t-shirt.
Who designed it?
Well, we're back to the old one.
Oh, that's cool. That was a great shirt.
We modified every year to
retro
to mimic the whatever the Goldberg assignment is for that year.
Okay.
We were trying to come up with a new design. Did I tell you about that?
Yeah, you mentioned it, but go ahead, tell our listeners.
That wasn't successful.
Well, you know, that's okay. Back to the drawing board.
We have a new one.
Okay.
I want a Tech Day. If you get me a Tech Day t-shirt, I will make sure you get an Ethics Bowl t-shirt.
Okay.
And what they're talking about are two wonderful gifts that we will send out to you if you send questions to us about everything from the number 800 to comments from our president to martyrdom, whatever you want to send us questions on. If you stump the panel, you get the shirt. And if you don't stump the panel, you also get the shirt. So, hey, get the shirt.
Can't lose.
So send us some questions.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
And here's somebody who's been working on a number of shirts. We left off last time in the middle of a set of questions from Dave Chow of Berkeley, Michigan, our good buddy down at CCS. Berkeley.
Berserkistan,
yes.
And such a cute little town.
It really is, and I know he gave us a scale. And you can hear my papers hitting the microstand here. Sorry about that. And, yes, we're looking at 14 out of 20, and so far you only have 2 wrong.
Very good.
So that should work.
So we have 4 more we can get wrong and still pass.
Is that correct, math man?
I think so.
Dan, we're depending on you. I really felt badly
70%?
How, like, at dinner, everybody shoved the check to you to make sure that the math added up correctly.
But, yes.
I know.
By the way, that Chinese did not sit well with me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
It was good food.
Okay.
But I think it's the MSG.
Maybe it is.
Or the nitrates.
Yes, whatever they
eat. That could be it.
My experiences with Chinese food lately, not so good.
Okay.
Thai food is fine.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe it's just a restaurant I go to.
Well, different choose for different people. Okay. All right. So now let's get back to today's questions, which are kind of interesting as they always are. What recognizable voice actor was to be the original voice of Darth Vader?
Orson Welles?
Yes. Yes, indeed. George Lucas backed out on Welles because he was too recognizable, he felt.
True enough.
So he went with James Earl Jones.
That's
Luke. Luke, oh. I'm your father.
Well, he has such a great
voice. You know that Luke is just supposed to be producing a TV series, Star Wars TV series?
What? For You're real? Kidding me.
Yes. Along with it revolve around the main characters. We're also all minor characters.
Okay.
Does he have anything to do with the next Indiana Jones movie that's coming out, the fourth one?
No, that's Spielberg, I thought.
But I thought, didn't Spielberg and Lucas do them, co-produce them?
I don't know.
Huh, I don't know.
George may be too busy.
But for television, that seems like such an odd format for that story. I mean...
It does. I'll watch it out of curiosity.
Okay.
But there's no Jedi, apparently, and there are no Jedi Knights. Without Jedi, really.
Yeah.
Well, I can just ask this question. Does anybody know what James Earl Jones' first film was? And it's a great film. A Stanley Kubrick film.
Oh, that's not the Great White Hope, is
2001?
It?
2001?
No.
I was going to say In the Heat of the Night, but that's not Kubrick.
Think Nuclear War.
Ooh.
Dr. Strangelove. Yes, he is the African-American pilot, one of the mission crew.
I remember.
And the voice is not as fully developed, but if you have the ear for his voice, which, again, because he's such a gorgeous voice, you can really hear it. Okay. The Pillsbury Doughboy, Poppin' Fresh, had a family.
The little pops.
He had a wife, a son, and a daughter, which I was not aware of this fact. I was just thought he was a solo act. But can you name the other members of his family?
No.
Mrs. Poppin' Fresh.
Well, her name is kind of a feminine takeoff on Poppin'.
Poppy?
Poppy Fresh. Okay. Yes, that's his wife. Okay.
Which is the name also of one of the, I'm trying to remember, CSI or... One of the
really?
who's the blonde on one of the shows?
You watch CSI,
her name is
don't you?
Poppy something.
Oh, really?
She
okay.
comes from a whole family of Georgia flowers. They named all the daughters.
Oh, the daughters.
Rose
okay.
and
Rose,
Violet,
Violet
and Poppy.
That's
and
one
Poppy.
Of the that's one of the CSI maybe CSI Miami. It's not.
Oh, it's
the
not the one.
One
that you
not
watch. Okay. All right. His son is the same name as a substance that was really big in discos. Pass me the...
Poppers.
That's it. It's Popper. Okay, that's Son Popper. Now, he's got a baby daughter, and her name is not at all alliterative with the others. It's...
Gretchen.
Actually, it's... Gretchen Fresh? That sounds like you're
that's
getting sick or something, you know? It better be Gretchen Fresh. Actually, it's the name that Jeff gives to the chocolate rabbit that comes in. His name for it.
Oh, that's when I usually don't pay attention.
sorry,
Jeff's not
Jeff.
With us today.
Professor Bunny. That's
well,
what I...
Okay, but something like it's would be more kind of childlike, short syllable.
Bun-bun.
Bun-bun. It oh, is. Bun. Okay,
that
so there's Poppin' Fresh, his wife Poppy, son Popper, and baby daughter Bun-bun.
That's my mom that's always said when she was little, when she was growing up, that she
when
looked
would
like a Pillsbury Doughboy.
Ever seen them?
I guess on the commercial.
Oh, okay.
I just always remember him with the giggle, you know, when you hit his
little
jelly belly kind of thing. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, he would do that kind of
nothing
like weasel.
Nothing
says
like something from
the oven. Thank you. But,
I like the takeoff on him in Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, yeah.
The Stay
Puft Marshmallow Man.
Yeah, okay. But
they blow up.
Nobody steps on a church in my town.
That's right.
Movie, it never fails to
if
be.
If anyone
funny.
Asks you if you were a god, say yes.
There you go. Yeah, I'd like to see the rest of the family someday.
I think the cinnamon roll ads may have
is
had
that it? Okay.
The whole
clan. Okay.
Yeah.
The whole flaking bunch. Bunch of them. Okay. Who was the first U.S. president to be a licensed pilot? So, first U.S. president to be a licensed pilot.
JFK.
Chester A. Arthur.
He was on PT boats. It was his poor brother that got either shot down or exploded or something.
Can't be FDR.
Was it somebody from the war era?
Well, actually, somebody post-war, I guess you could say.
Eisenhower.
Oh,
Eisenhower.
Kennedy.
Yeah, no, it was Dwight Eisenhower.
Oh, like.
And this was interesting because he found out that pilots earned more money, and the person who put the kibosh on that was his wife, Mamie. Because certainly in the early days, sadly, of aviation, that there were a lot of crashes, a lot of accidents, and she told him, oh, no, this is not going to go on.
She probably said something different.
Well, she might have. She was a lady, as Mamie Dowd herself. But, I mean, come on, she didn't want to see.
But a mean one, right? Did we learn that last show?
Well, it sounded like it. You know, I just, this whole
it's really
thing.
It's mean to
She was to Pat Nixon.
Yeah, to Pat Nixon.
That was kind of,
because she only had a Republican cloth coat.
That's right. Yeah, she was not nice to her at all.
I thought she'd made that comment to Kay Summersby, which at least would have been intelligible psychologically.
Well, right, yeah. No, I don't think they ever really conversed.
Hope not.
We hope not, yes. What automobile was the first to have seat belts?
Corvair.
Yeah, really. No, this is actually earlier than the Corvair. Because I remember my friend Sue Harmon, her dad, once he, on Safe at Any Speed, came out, he went out and bought a Corvair. Just a spite.
How old are we talking? I mean, like a Packard, Model T?
After those.
Okay.
This is a company that's no longer...
Rambler.
It is a Rambler. It's a 1950 Nash Rambler.
Oh,
so it's a company that's no longer, although the Rambler name... was picked up by AMC.
AMC, yeah.
Because, yeah, I saw this really horrible article about cars that you should have never have owned, and the top three were cars that I own.
Did you see that on Time?
Yeah.
Did you have, like, a Pinto?
I had a Pinto.
You did? You had one that had, like, a billion
Corvair.
Miles on
yeah,
it, right?
Okay. And then also
an Edsel?
The Gremlin.
You couldn't have had an Edsel.
No. The Gremlin and then the AMC Pacer, which was, like, driving in a...
Yeah.
Little moon bubble.
It was a moon bubble. You could never defrost that car in Michigan on a really cold day. You would be scraping the inside of the windscreen.
I think I mentioned that if you go to Time and you look at their top 50, the commentary is hilarious.
Yes, it is.
Really. It's in the 90s, there are some just surprising cars now, like the Ford Explorer.
Yes.
They put the Hummer on there, thank God.
Oh, great. Yeah, those things are scary.
To be a complete waste.
I hate getting on the highway
so
with them.
And they're so butt ugly. I'm sorry.
And they're so big, you can't see around them. You can't see over them.
Because of a vehicle like that in the city, there is no zero need for it. Then it really called. What's the purpose in getting one?
Outside of Baghdad, I see.
Yeah,
them.
I was going to say, I really don't think you need them. But the great thing about the Pinto, it was dead cheap. And the same thing about the AMC cars.
I'm going to get a thousand letters from Hummer owners. Sorry.
Probably. Too bad. But the AMC cars were so good on gas.
Well, there
I
got to
admit, they were great on gas.
You think that many people? No.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, sorry. That's why nobody listens to the show.
No. Well, I'll tell you a great story during the break about our AVP.
I actually knew our show because people that are not even from the area have heard this show. Like,
yeah.
A friend of mine from St. Louis.
Sweet.
Good deal.
Have you heard my voice in the radio?
There you go. What is Donald Duck's middle name?
Is it alliterative?
No, it isn't, which would be kind of cool. He'd be Triple D, if he had a rep name.
F?
It is an F. It starts with an F. Yes.
Frank?
No.
Francis? Fred?
No, this is a name that's probably attached to what would appear to be a very spoiled little fellow in a book that was popular in the early part of the century.
Fausto.
Fauntleroy.
It is. That's it. Little Lord Fauntleroy. That's it. His middle name is Fauntleroy.
Donald Fauntleroy Duck.
Now his nephew's name.
Huey, Dewey, and Louie.
Right. I had a history teacher in high school that gave you extra credit if you could name which duck wore which color of hat or shirt.
Jeez.
He collected comic books. He was like totally insane on those. And Uncle Scrooge. I mean, he had all these weird, bizarre trivia questions about
Scrooge McDuck.
Scrooge McDuck, indeed.
Too bad he didn't have Drew as a student.
Oh, was he into that?
Well, collected comic books for years. So,
what American city is also known as the City of Carousels?
Peoria.
City of Carousels, Peoria. I wonder what Peoria, if they are a city of something, city of whatever.
Like
can't be San Francisco.
It's on the West Coast, actually.
Okay.
West Coast.
And it's not San Francisco.
It's not San Fran, no.
Not Seattle.
Not Seattle, but you're getting close.
Well, Portland.
Yes, it is Portland, Oregon.
They must have a lot of hair.
So I was going to ask you, B, what's up with that?
Portland is the city of carousels?
That's what it says, city of carousels. And this is carousels as in, Yeah, not like...
Well, there... Wow. I mean, used to be one out at... Jansen Beach Mall, which I don't think even exists anymore. I mean, Portland's always been the city of roses to me.
Any highways designed maybe in a carousel shape or?
Oh, the roundabouts.
Roundabouts,
There are some highway entrances and exits where you basically are you know, really curving around, or highways that curve around the city.
Okay, well, while we think about city design, let's take a break.
It's an Ask the Professor flashback.
The radio program on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors and their guests in a special session of unrehearsed questions and answers. I'm your host, Edwin DeWint. On my right, from the Department of Religious Studies, the chair of that department, Professor George Pickering.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
Pleasure to have you here, sure. As always.
Sure.
And to his far right, from the Department of History, right. Professor Greg Sumner.
Yeah, do we get, like, door prizes or something?
Is that, like, the radical right? Oh,
yeah. No, not really. He couldn't accuse Greg of being that at all.
Can we turn in our meal ticket for a door prize?
I don't see why not. Okay. Sure. He's back. Kevin Sajak.
The Lazarus of piano
the
players.
The Lazarus of piano players, yes.
Welcome.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks.
We're glad to have you here. Most of the questions, certainly, you hear in this program are sent in by our listeners. Before we start with our questions from the people out there in Radioland,
I know it's coming.
We have the producer's questions.
Oh, these are always...
Our producer, Melissa Samuel.
Ungrammatical, historical, all the vices. Go ahead.
What is the last name of the architect who designed the General Motors Tech Center? He also did Cranbrook.
Finn.
I'm going to throw in Dulles Airport next.
And he designed the first co-ed dorm at the University of Chicago.
Really?
Well.
Imagine my surprise in the fall of 1959, coming out of the protected atmosphere of Bates College to a place where they were throwing open co-ed dorms.
Wow.
I mean, at Bates, women were signing in and out in those days. Mm-hmm.
Imagine my surprise in 1968 going to Michigan State University and having a roommate who had all his kilos of marijuana mailed to our room in my name so he wouldn't be arrested.
Very thoughtful man.
It was. I was.
It was a man, wasn't it?
Indeed it was.
And we're back with questions from Dave Chow of Berkeley, Michigan. And the last one was kind of a shocker about the city of carousels.
About my home city that I didn't even
Beth
know.
Is still pondering this one.
They'll be investigating, no doubt.
I think so. I think you need to call Sally or somebody to say, what up with the carousels, dog?
Road trip.
Road trip. We need to do that. Who was the first U.S. president to be born outside of the original 13 states? First U.S. president Lincoln. Not born in the... Yes. Good. Dan, excellent.
Was he born in Illinois?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
Kentucky.
Kentucky, that's
right.
That's
then right.
Then the family moved to Indiana and then Illinois.
Illinois, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's...
He was born a matter of a few miles from the birthplace of Jefferson Davis.
Oh, my God.
What's the odds of them becoming the presidents of opposing camps?
Oh, is that fraud? Oh, my goodness. Back to comics. Maybe we need to hit the cell phone to Drew on the quick dial. Name the two creators of the Batman comic book character. Now, one of the names is the same name as someone who taught math here.
Not Cornish. Travis.
Of that era, Jim Lenehan, Mary Jo Nichols. Bob Kane. Absolutely.
And then Frank somebody or other, right?
No,
not Stanley.
No, this is kind of an interesting name. The last name is the same name as something that you, a hand expression that you shouldn't make out the window when you're irate at a driver.
Bird?
Not the bird, but.
I can't think of another one.
A fist?
I'm not explaining this terribly well, am I?
Finger, yes.
Okay, Bill Finger. Bob Kane was the artist, and Bill Finger was the writer of Batman. Now, the original Batman, I mean, isn't it, that goes back to like the 30s, doesn't it?
It's pretty old.
Mm-hmm, it's pretty old, okay.
Depression era.
And he's psycho.
And he's like,
well, he saw his parents murdered.
That's
so
right.
Batman is basically the psychotic angel of vengeance.
He didn't get counseling.
Well, yeah, because there was like just a ton of it available, like in the 30s, right? Yeah. Don't eat, dear. We're saving money for therapy. You know, we can't get you new shoes. Your brother needs therapy. Yeah, I don't think that was really happening.
They were rich.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Oh, that's right. His family
Wayne's,
was Stately Wayne Manor, right?
Yes. Sure.
Yeah. There we go. Who was the first U.S. president to drive a car? First U.S. president to drive
I'm
a
guessing
car.
It wasn't William Howard Taft.
Well, it better have had some really good shock absorbers
there's a fit issue there.
On it. Yeah.
The Frank Cannon Lincoln Continental.
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh, my God.
Wilson? No, that's too early.
That's too late. It's later, actually.
Oh, that's too late.
It's later, which is kind of a surprise.
Okay, it's later. Okay, so Wilson is too late.
Wilson is too late.
Can't be McKinley. That's too
so
early.
It's got to be
well,
Teddy
actually,
Roosevelt.
Well, McKinley has a connection to the car, but that's okay.
Teddy Roosevelt.
Teddy Roosevelt. No. That's correct.
TR, my man.
Did he drive it while he was hunting?
Oh, sort of like our windshield cowboy
windshield.
President? Oh, you're referring to the LBJ hunting thing,
yeah.
Aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Last week on Real Time on Bill Maher's show on HBO, he had Vicente Fox on, the former president of Mexico, who in his recent publication, his new book, describes George Bush as a windshield cowboy. And I thought, well, that's an interesting expression. And he explained why, that when they were visiting in Mexico, when the Bushes came to visit him in Mexico, he President Fox had been riding since he was like 2 years old. And he had this beautiful stallion that he had a pair. And he said, do you want to ride with me? Because he had always heard that he was like big on the Texas ranch
thing. Well, and that shouldn't be a problem.
Bush assured him that, oh, no, security would not allow this. And, oh, it was too dangerous or whatever else. So when he reciprocated, you know, his visit then to the Bush Crawford Ranch, he said there weren't any horses. I mean, that he took him around like in a, you know, like a Range Rover or some kind of Jeep or something that way. So he said in Mexico we would refer to someone like that as a windshield cowboy.
Well, he bought the ranch shortly before he started his 2000 campaign. I mean, it's not like this is something that has been his norm.
No. But
for security, I can kind of see why you might not want two world leaders.
Princess Anne rode
horses.
Ponies, honey. So's a Queen Anne.
He's a failed oil jockey.
He is.
Yeah, but I mean, I just thought.
But he should be able to ride
a horse.
Fake
Texas accent.
Oh, yeah. I mean, come on. Hello. Where did you go to school?
Which seems to deepen it in certain situations.
Isn't it amazing how that accent comes on and goes, yeah.
Although, to be fair on that, my mother's Southern, especially when she got angry, always came out more. And even with Sally, will lapse into the same thing when she gets really worked up.
Well, the connection back to McKinley is he notes here, I love Dave's. His questions and his answers. The first president to drive a car, Teddy Roosevelt, he said William McKinley was the first to ride in one, his own hearse.
Well,
so I suppose like that everybody joke. Else was kind of probably pulled on horse-drawn caisson, probably, I would imagine. Yeah, okay. And our final question from Dave, which of the North American major league sports was the first to have an all-star game? Really
basketball.
No.
I'm guessing hockey.
No, which is like, no.
Baseball. I saw you get excited.
I know,
so.
But, well, this is there's for a reason. It is baseball. Yeah. Yes, it was Major League Baseball in 1933 held their all-star game at the Century of Progress World's Fair in Chicago.
Cool.
I believe it was newspaper sponsored or something, wasn't it?
Initially? Which is so cool. Okay. Yeah. Oh, Dave. You didn't win, but your questions are so great. It's gift time, and we love them, and send more. And thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Love those questions that sort of vary and range.
Yeah,
all over
they're really good.
Never know what to expect.
Keep us on our toes.
Okay, our next set of questions comes from. Let me get to the back page because he's got an email address, which is not his name.
I see you flipping pages.
A.L. Mitchell.
Yeah.
But he doesn't give a hometown, which is always sad.
What's his email address? Never mind.
We're not going to read that over the air.
Hi, A.L.
There are 20 songs. Sometimes. He said 14 correct is passing, so once again we're hitting that 70%.
It sounds like people are listening to our advice.
I was going to say, which is really,
of
really
giving
nice.
Giving us a grading scale.
That's very generous.
Yeah, okay.
I think they should really up it because, honestly, we rarely get below 90.
Well, Mr. Honors Program, dude, okay.
No, but if we didn't get any hints, we probably would be flirting with the 70s.
Okay, that's true.
But that's okay. Keep the hints.
Well,
keep
so
the
split
hints coming?
The difference in 80% should 80. Be.
Okay, 80%.
If somebody doesn't provide a scale, that's what we should set as 80? Our own. Yeah.
Fine, 80 is good.
Okay, we got
I'm good
that.
With the middle C.
Middle C, really? I'll take a passing grade, okay, thanks.
Roy wants his gentleman C.
Yeah, I had someone come in and say, is it too late to do pass-fail in your class? Like, yeah. You had to do that the first 2 weeks, dear. Okay. All right. So who wrote these 20 songs? 14, correct is passing.
Oh, okay.
Who wrote Joy to the World? And he notes the Three Dog Night version.
Yeah. Well, that's important to know.
Yeah, that is important to know because, you know, the other is, you know.
Presumably we can't just say the performer, right? Just saying Three Dog Night wouldn't be. Is it one
of the... It is one, I think, a member of Three Dog Night, yes.
Beth?
Initials are H-A.
I can't remember their names. Can I get like half a point? Because
yes, well, you can.
You said it was the three.
It's Hoyt Axton. So you do get that one.
But he's like country dude.
Hoyt Axton, yeah. He was a country dude.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool.
A heavy set country dude. Well, trust me, he was not in Three Dog Night.
Oh, okay. Okay. I thought he was. All right. Fine. Leaving on a Jet Plane. And this is the Peter, Paul, and Mary version. And this is someone who wrote some country, but wrote a lot of pop songs.
Jim Webb?
No. Last name is the same name as the city in the Rocky Mountain region.
John Denver. And isn't it ironic that they've been, given the way he died, that they've been pushing his best of album?
Yes.
And they always play Leaving on a Jet Plane.
I know.
I'm like, this is so
really
bad.
Would you stop doing that? I know. I just think that's like really, really bad.
He was such a great advocate, though, before Congress, facing the PMRC.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he and Frank Zappa and Dee Snider. I mean, what a combination.
I know, that's what I mean when you think about John Denver, Dee Snider. Yeah, okay. My head just exploded right here on my coffee table. Okay. Happy Trails to You. And he notes the Roy Rogers version. I didn't know there was another version.
I didn't know there was either.
This is the Roy Rogers version. And
did a Gershwin write that?
No.
Pat Buttram.
Oh, really? Yeah, really. Do you know the tune? Happy Trails to You Until We Meet Again? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
This would be somebody who was close to Roy.
Dale
Evans. Yeah, okay. She wrote it.
Trigger.
Yeah.
Trigger.
He tapped it out.
Yeah, that's what I was
going to say. Wilbur.
Wilbur. You know, I just found it really frightening that a friend one time visited the Roy Rogers Ranch and came back with the pictures to show that Trigger's like stuffed is like there.
Ew.
I know. I was like, did you have to take a picture of that? I really wish
Gross.
You had. I know. I just
the Trigger is stuffed and actually in a museum is kind of icky.
Yeah, I know.
Creepo.
Well, not as icky as Bentham. Gets
yeah, that's
rolled
true.
Out every year for the University
that's
of London.
I know. Yeah,
he's in a glass case.
I mean, really, what use?
Jimmy Bentham.
What is the utility? Oh. I ask you.
I guess because it was in his will and they took his money, dog.
Well,
so you
they
had
have
to
their pet stuffed and preserved and stick them in their house.
I was joking with Beth
Come
the other
to
day
see
that
your
I
dead
might
dog every day.
That's do funny. That with Fat Boy. Well, we're going to have to stop there on that happy note.
On a Wisconsin death trip. Okay.
So let me thank our panel, Professor Maggio.
I'll try to understand other people's perspectives.
Good for you, Dan. Professor Finkenbein.
I'm not smiling.
Okay, and Professor Oljar.
Back next week.
Indeed.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of the Communication Studies Department studios in the Briggs Building on the U of D Mercy McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced, technically directed, and saved every week by Michael Jason, and our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. So until next week, I'm your host, Kathy Bush. Let's go Tribe, and let's go Red Wings!
And we're back with another summertime classic edition of Ask the Professor next week. So please plan to join us.